This book is dedicated to anyone who has lived a hard life in order to get by. Such people are seldom regarded as adventurers, yet I think they're the mantelpiece characters. I am no such person. I know lots of people who have done it tough, really tough, and none of them would ever introduce themselves or write about, hint at, or suggest that they're an adventurer, as if such a thing can be a job title. And to May and Helen, my daughter and wife, who have redefined my sense of home and away, golly, I've got it good. Backstory, pre-beard. Day 62 of 135, Africa, 2007. Offshore, alone. The world around me looks like a mouldy sponge cake, one that's been left uncovered on a kitchen table for 26 days of stale summer air, enduring two heat waves and four storms. A cake that had once been freshly creamed, passion fruit drizzled and frosty topped, but is now a blotched, fuzzy fusion of bacteria and mould. Its clearly defined layers, once perky as new mattresses, are now sagging. The view over the bow of my kayak, my view for 7 to 10 hours a day, currently due south, would usually be a perfectly clear version of myself silhouetted by the midday sun, but today I cast no shadow. The layers of sea, air and sky are several shades of grey. Sea is mossy green and whirls of grey dot the skyline, like the cake's bacteria, which would be fit to kill a dog if I was to eat what I see, although they could be thought of as passion fruit seeds. I presume the whirls are storms or squalls or a distant flock of birds. I take it that I should avoid the dark bits, which is useless to think from a kayak at sea, wind at my back and land that won't have me and a sky that moves. The benign breeze that usually blows a little stiffer in the afternoons is no longer playing out. At 45 degrees to my right is a view of borderlands between South Africa and Mozambique, if I squint. I assume the official line of sovereignty is a triangular cardinal marker built on the high point of a reddish headland, but it might be a house or a fused droplet of water on my sunglasses. There's no border marker on my charts, which are from the 1970s and fast becoming useless, destined to be toilet paper instead of navigation aids. I'm 8 kilometres from shore, although it could be 10 or 5. Distance and scale are gummed up and hard to fathom in moody conditions, and I dare not turn on my GPS because I've learnt my lesson. You come to rely on gadgets and digital numbers like grease on lips and milk on cereal. And I don't like the feeling when batteries die, as if you've lost part of your brain. To distract myself, I return to my vision of the cake on the table. I imagine no one has come or gone from the house to disturb things in those 26 days. Sweaty funk emanates into the room, combining with the essence of four white terriers that live almost permanently in the house. The cake has sat there for 4 weekends and 3 working weeks, awaiting swearing and howls of disgust from the returned troop of sandcastle building, trash novel reading, overeating family of 7. I see Jack, the most lovable of the family, youngest of 5, irresponsible because he's 10 and has been allowed to be carefree. It's Jack who forgot the cake. Jack's dad, Henry, who people, including the kids, call Hen, is really to blame, having given Jack 2 jobs instead of 1. Keeping the dogs happy while the car was being packed is where the boys' responsibilities should have stopped. It was a stupid idea for Jack to have to get the cake from the kitchen table when the dogs had been shut in the back of the car, as his eldest sister Kate knew all along. Hammering home the injustice, she had made the cake. Jack remembered he'd forgotten the cake not far from home, only about 20 minutes into the 6-hour drive to the coast, but thought best not to tell his mum, which to Jack was a sure sign of good decision-making. So there was the cake, moulding away beautifully in a semi-controlled state, as if the new science teacher, overeager and wasteful by nature, had set up an experiment to impress the kids on day one of the school year. Storytelling fills my thoughts to the beat of 50 unthinking strokes per minute because I have all the time in the world. It's unsurprising there's a mouldy funk to my thinking. As life at sea, particularly sea kayaking, where your backside